while that it was rough. But lately I've been doing better than the last four cold Decembers I recall.
Coming up next on What's Going On with Earl Ingram, we welcome back Dr. Kerman for part two of our powerful series on BLBR. In this follow-up conversation, Dr. Kerman dives deeper into the impact of research and the real-life stories that make BLBR a vital discussion for our community. If you thought part one was insightful, you won't want to miss the next chapter, packed with knowledge, solutions, and a vision for change. Stay tuned, because part two starts right now. Follow us on civicmedia.us or wherever you follow your podcast. Please like and subscribe as well.
But there's no man as terrified as the man who stands to lose you.
Hello, and welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. I am excited, as always, to be able to bring relevant conversation to you, the listening audience. I've said this once, I've said it 1,000 times. What is the purpose of having a platform if you don't use it to bring relevant topical information to those in the listening audience? Today is no different, as each time we have the honor and privilege of having Fratert and the Medical College of Wisconsin's Health Network doctors who grace these airways. Today, again, is no different. We welcome back pulmonologist Dr. Kerman. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Earl. How are you?
I'm fine, and welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Let's begin by telling the audience what a pulmonologist is.
A pulmonologist is a doctor who helps manage the lungs and the respiratory ailments that can occur even if you have healthy lungs. And I'm actually a special kind of pulmonologist called an interventional pulmonologist. So I'm an expert in minimally invasive procedures that occur in the lungs using a tiny little camera through your mouth.
So for those of us, you know, just lay people, average everyday citizens, who really don't know at all the inner workings of the lungs and why they're so precious and why we should take extreme care of them, tell us a little bit about the inner workings of the lungs and why they're so important.
That's a great question. The lungs are what help you breathe. They are the apparatus in the body that helps exchange oxygen for carbon dioxide, the byproduct of respiration. And so they bring oxygen in and they help oxygen get delivered to the muscles within the body and the other organs that are vital, like your heart and your brain. And they get rid of the carbon dioxide that your body builds up just in the process of normal metabolism. Even though the lungs are so important, they are exquisitely sensitive. And that's why they're protected by the rib cage that helps isolate them and make sure they don't get injured. But even though they're protected by that physical barrier, they are still subject to various problems that can occur that are more intrinsic to the lungs. And these are things like COPD, asthma, pneumonia. So there's a variety of different conditions that can affect them that can compromise your breathing. And when your lungs are compromised, they can't deliver adequate oxygen to other parts of your body. And so the whole body suffers. As with other vital organs, they are vital by definition, and they all work together. And when one is faltering, that can put a lot of stress on the rest of the body.
So lungs, plural. I've, you know, heard of lung transplants. We hear heart transplants and and all the other liver and kidney transplants. But lung transplants happen as well. How rare are they?
They are, unfortunately not that rare. There are many, many people out there that have really bad, incurable lung problems. And so an option for those people is a lung transplantation. So far this year, we've done, I want to say, about 20 or 25 lung transplants at Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. And so we are one of two lung transplant centers in the state. And, that's a great option for patients who really need it.
You know, 20 is a lot, but when we talk about the patients who are on a list to get lung transplants, it clearly is better if we are more cognizant of the value of our lungs than that we have to wait on a long list to have them replaced.
Absolutely. There are a finite number of available organs, and this is true with any organs. You're talking about lungs, kidneys, hearts, and so you have to triage. When you don't have enough of something, you have to prioritize who gets it first and who has to wait a little bit longer. And that prioritization is primarily done based on how sick you are. And that's with any organ. And lungs are no different. So we have some patients that we see that are incredibly sick. They are on something called ECMO, which is extra corporeal membranous oxygenation. It's kind of like dialysis for your lungs. And those are patients who are literally attached to a machine in the hospital until they can get a lung transplant sometimes. And so when you're in challenging situations like this, lung transplant is a great, option.
I'm a guy who's, in my 70s, and I remember the first time I heard the term iron lung. Quite a while ago, and so that's what you mean. That I mean, there are apparatus, I guess, that can keep a person breathing. These kinds of machines for a period of time. I'm sure, it's not something that you really want to be connected to, but there are some types of things that. Machines that can keep you going.
That's right. Think of it as a 2025 version of an iron lung, something that can keep you alive and going when you need it. So of course, no one wants it, but sometimes these things are necessary. The nice thing now is that we have a lot of different options for certain patient populations that can either obviate the need for a lung transplantation completely or delay something like a lung transplant until a little bit later, which is, nice. The best lung transplant or the best organ transplant in general is the one you don't need. Again, if you need it, you need it. But if you can, delay that and do some other less invasive options first, you'll be better off for that.
So let's get into the nuts and bolts of the conversation this morning. And, certainly have some questions that I want to ask you. But before we get there, so what are some of the things that can help destroy the lungs?
First and foremost, smoking. It amazes me, you know, how many young people I see every day in the hospital who are smoking, and they think that lung problems and other health problems are not going to happen to them. But then, you know, fast forward 20 or 30 years, and they're going to be one of the patients that I'm seeing talking about different procedures on, potentially even talking about lung transplantation on. So smoking first and foremost. Other than that, we see lung problems caused by a variety of different issues.
Carcinogens, different carcinogens.
Yeah, carcinogens, some environmental exposures potentially, infections. It kind of runs the whole gamut.
Let me, smoking. You know, cigars are very popular now. There was a time when I was a young person that cigars were really popular, and then they waned. And now it is a status symbol in this country. If a guy like a Michael Jordan can smoke a $100 cigar every day, it was a great athlete and as wealthy person. So tobacco, whether it's cigarette tobacco or cigar tobacco or marijuana, smoking the lungs is the same, right?
I would say nothing that you know, inhale besides air is good for you. It is hard to quantify, if you will, what is better or worse. So I honestly can't tell you if cigarettes are better than cigars, are better than marijuana, but I'll tell you that none of them are good. So breathe all the air you want, and nothing else is my recommendation.
So let's talk about BLVR. What is that an acronym for?
That's an acronym for bronchoscopic lung volume reduction.
Which in simplest terms is you're not getting enough oxygen.
So
what does that mean in simplest terms?
Yeah, that is a name for a procedure where we essentially block off a part of the lung that has a lot of emphysema in it, which is a form of COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, so that the good lung, or the good part of the lung, I should say, has more room and you can breathe more efficiently, more effectively, and so you feel less short of breath. This is one of those procedures that I alluded to earlier when I said that we have new things that can kind of fill the gap so that you may not need a lung transplant or you may not need it right now.
It's also the capacity of the lung. I always talk about this great creation, the human body, and the way it works and the way it was created. Clearly, it was created to have two lungs with full capacity to take in oxygen and to breathe and all those kind of things. And you're saying that, okay, so even though you can cut off a portion of a damaged lung, a person can still clearly not live the kind of life that they did when they had full use of both lungs, but you can certainly live a life that is decent.
Absolutely. There are thousands and thousands of people right here in Wisconsin that have really bad COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And they have that primarily because they either still smoke or smoked in the past. And what this has caused is it's caused destruction of their normal lung tissue. So their lungs are permanently damaged. And when the lung is damaged over time, it's not going to work as well as it did in the past. And so what we used to do is we used to do a highly invasive surgical procedure called lung volume reduction surgery, in which we would actually cut out the most diseased, damaged part of the lung. But that was a very complex procedure. And frankly, there were a lot of complications associated with it. Because of that, that option is rarely done anymore. Now what we do instead is we accomplish the same thing, but we do it minimally invasively and we do it non-surgically. So there's no cutting whatsoever. During a 30-minute procedure, while you are asleep, so you don't remember anything, you don't feel anything, we have a little tiny camera that goes through your mouth, and we use that camera to place four little tiny valves. These are one-way devices that let air out but not in, and they are about the size of your fingernail, so they're really, really tiny. And we put those into the most damaged part of the lung, and that causes that part to deflate. It's as if it weren't there at all, but instead of having to cut it out, we can just do this. And then we watch you in the hospital for a couple of days afterwards, make sure you're doing okay. And then patients go home thereafter with no restrictions. And it can really substantially improve their breathing so that they certainly don't need a lung transplant now, if ever.
I have to say to you, Dr. Kerman, that is, I told you I'm an old guy. That's from that Twilight, that Twilight Zone, you know, kind of thing that has come to be a reality. How do insurance companies, you know, how are they with this new surgery? Are they willing to pay for this, or are they kind of standoffish on it? It's still early.
It is widely supported by insurance companies. In fact, I have never had a patient who I thought would benefit from this procedure not have their insurance company approve it. So insurance coverage is a non-issue here. The reason for that, Earl, is that this is a guideline recommended standard of care now and has been actually for the past 5 years. Despite that, it's still gaining in popularity and awareness is still increasing. Not every doctor knows about it. Certainly not every patient does, but as more learn about it, it's being rapidly embraced.
So you just, well, that's why you're a pulmonologist with Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network employee, because our patients, you know, who aren't doctors, who aren't aware of it, you would think that something as revolutionary as this and the amount of money that it would save, you know, hospitals and insurance companies, that this would be up in neon everywhere.
You would think. In the medical world, there's so much happening so fast. It's a very dynamic entity that it's honestly hard to keep up with all of the advances, new technology, right, and advances. Exactly. And so just like anything, you know, this is taking time, but it really is changing the landscape of how we manage patients who have emphysema and COPD. And again, those are one and the same. So if your doctor has told you that you have one, you know, you have the other, and vice versa. They're the same entity.
So again, you're a pulmonologist. There are many other pulmonologists. Is this something that you were taught as you were, you know, doing your schooling, or is this something that came later? Is this something that's being taught to new doctors of pulmonology? How is that going?
Yeah, that's a great, great question, Earl. So I finished my training back in 2018, so 7 years ago. And this became commercially available just after I finished training. So this is something that I learned from some of the original physicians who did this in the clinical trials that ultimately led to FDA approval. We've been doing it, you know, ever since. And now we have one of the largest, highest volume programs in the country, actually. And we have, you know, great outcomes. And this is something that we get patients coming to see us for from all over the region.
You know, doctor, you said earlier that lung damage is irreversible. And so those, again, from my generation who, you know, watched the commercials with Lucky Strike and Camo and Pall Mall and all of those cigarettes without filters. And unfortunately, that generation, for the most part, are gone. But then my generation followed and we wound up with these things on packages of cigarettes that said cigarette smoking can be hazardous to your health. And so many of us stopped smoking. And just listening to you, it appears as though this is going to be inevitable. And so it is critically important for many of us as we continue to age. So this conversation we're having right now and that's going to be heard across the entire 24 radio stations of Civic Media is a very important conversation.
Absolutely. You know, I think that when you have chronic medical problems, whatever it is, it's really important that you as the patient serve as your own advocate. You are responsible for your own care. You partner with your physician, and that's how you can have the best quality of life possible. And so if you have a chronic condition of whatever sort, it would behoove you to educate yourself, read about it, learn about it. And so that way you can be cognizant of new technology and new advances that are either in development or have come to fruition. And if you have emphysema and or COPD, bronchoscopic lung volume reduction with endobronchial valves is a great option that I would encourage you to discuss with your healthcare provider. And if your healthcare provider happens to not be as familiar with this, that's okay. You can still serve as your own advocate and be evaluated at Frater and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. You don't necessarily need a referral for something like this.
So what's a comprehensive lung program? And is that something that I need to be undertaking whether I'm healthy or not?
That's a fantastic question, Earl. So a comprehensive lung health program is one where the providers have access to a variety of different resources. And even if you are seeing them for one particular problem, because of the resources and because of the setting that they're in, they can offer a comprehensive assessment, if you will. Let me give you an example. So when a patient comes to see me for their COPD or their emphysema, because they are interested in valves, I am not only going to evaluate them for that specific procedure, I'm going to also assess their medication regimen, make sure that that is optimized. I will look at potential clinical trials that are ongoing or that will soon be starting and assess their candidacy for those. I'm also going to think about things like lung transplant. And so I'm really going to try to provide a comprehensive assessment for everything that could be contributing to their respiratory problem, and then discuss all of the different possible solutions. The general approach that I like to take is to kind of work on multiple treatment avenues simultaneously. So that way, care is more expeditious, if you will. So I'm going to optimize their pharmacologic regimen, i.e. their medications. I'm going to evaluate them for currently available procedures, as well as stuff that will be available in the future. And because of our resource-rich environment at Frater and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network, we're able to provide care in that manner.
So let me, and I always look at myself as the average Joe, the average person. And so, you know, again, I'm 71 years old. I worked in the auto industry for 34 years. I worked in a plant that clearly exposed us to carcinogens. And clearly, is, if you look at this plant, it was over 100 and stood for over 110 years, and I would always look around it and look up at the ceiling and the walls and the windows and, you know, the darkness, the dust, and all the different things that we were exposed to in the workplace. I smoked cigarettes for maybe only 10 years of my life and quit that so long ago I almost don't remember. I used to inhale marijuana. Yeah, I did. Quit that long ago. But I will say to you, and I'm a guy who can walk 10 miles when I'm walking, but there are times when my wife asked me about, well, my breathing. So am I a candidate? Am I a guy who really should be looking into, you know, having this long plan that you're talking about?
It's difficult to say just hearing your story. I would say if you are walking 10 miles or could walk 10 miles already, you're probably too healthy for something like this. But, you know, here's what I will say. If you are, sorry, if you have been told by your doctor that you have emphysema or COPD, and you are on inhalers already, and you're still short of breath, even if you're just short of breath when you're doing stuff, when you're exerting yourself, doing physical activity, it is worth being evaluated for something like this, because you have, you know, nothing to lose. The evaluation doesn't commit you to anything. You're simply getting a comprehensive assessment for a procedure that may help you. And even if you're not a candidate for it now, you may be a candidate for it in the future. And the people that tend to do the best with any type of intervention like this are the ones who get it as soon as they qualify, not when they barely qualify anymore because they're too sick. And the only other thing that I want to, you know, add there, and I think I mentioned this again, is, you know, don't be afraid to be your own advocate and to call up and schedule your own appointment for evaluation for something like this, whether at our center or somewhere else. You don't necessarily need a referral, and you don't necessarily need the approval of your, you know, current provider. I would encourage you absolutely to discuss it with your current provider. It's always good to keep them in the loop, but if they are not familiar with this, you know, that's okay. This is an opportunity for everyone to get educated.
So we're watching, so the evening news, and over the last several days, hey, if you go outside, you can't be out there long. It's a code red. And so you really got to be careful. And they're giving us these signs about the smoke in the atmosphere. Your thoughts?
I would, you know, say this, Earl. There are a lot of environmental issues going on now, and kind of the smoke exposure is one of the ones that is most relevant to Wisconsinites currently. If there are environmental smoke warnings on the news or that you read about, I would encourage you to take those seriously, especially if you have underlying lung problems. If you have underlying lung issues, you know, wearing a mask, you know, may help. If you do have to go outside, perhaps, you know, staying indoors, you know, a bit more during those time periods when there is increased environmental smoke may be beneficial. It may help prevent an exacerbation or a flare up of your underlying lung condition. So, definitely do take that seriously. It is a real issue now, unfortunately.
So, you know, Dr. Kerman, you obviously have been at this for some time. Tell us some of the success stories that you can tell us about people who've had this procedure done.
Yeah. I have a lot of success stories. One of my favorite ones, and this was something that we shared in our quarterly hospital publication. It's called Freighter Today. Goes out to people all over the state. And it shares inspirational patient stories, and particularly those that have involved a multidisciplinary approach, which is something that we tend to offer at Freighter and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. This is where you have providers from all different specialties coming together to provide patients with the optimal, most cutting edge care. And around my, I don't know, he was probably my 10th patient or so that I had performed this procedure on. So this is a couple years ago now. I asked this gentleman the same thing that I ask every patient when they come to see me. And I said, "Sir, you know, what do you hope to achieve with this procedure? Why are you interested in it?" And he said, "Dr. Kerman, what I'd really like to do is be able to sleep in my own bed." And I said, "Huh, you know, that was a little bit unusual. Normally people will say something along the lines of, you know, they want to be able to walk further or they want to be able to go to the grocery store. But he said, "I want to sleep in my own bed." And I said, "Listen, I understand that you're short of breath when you exert yourself, but, you know, how does that prevent you from sleeping in your bed?" And he said, "Well, my bed is on the second floor. And if I go up a flight of stairs, I am so winded at the top that I feel like I'm about to pass out. And so for the past 5 years, I've been sleeping on the couch in the living room downstairs, and I miss my bed." And I said, "Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I can actually really appreciate that." And so he qualified for the procedure. We did it. And 2 weeks later, he called me up and he said, "I've got a story to tell you." He said, "I've been doing well since the procedure. And yesterday, I managed to go up the stairs and sleep in my own bed. And it was glorious. It was like having my life back." And so, you know, that's just kind of one of the examples that really has stuck with me.
You know, sir, the advancement in healthcare and all of these different things that are happening is pretty amazing to me, because as I have to keep repeating, I'm from a different era. And I'm from an era where if you had emphysema, it was almost guaranteed that the rest of your life was going to be full of misery. And we saw that, and I saw that with many elders. How much of shortness of breath and the kinds of things that we are talking about here have to do with the aging process? And how do we know that, okay, if I, part of this is, you know, I'm 71 years old, I clearly don't have the lung capacity that I had when I was 25. But what you are saying is always err on the side of precaution. Have it checked out anyway.
Absolutely. You know, there is no doubt that as we get older, our lung function declines. So does our
everything cardiac else, function. Right?
Yeah, right. I mean, that's just a natural part of getting older. Your body, you know, starts to decline, albeit slowly. When you have done something like smoking in the past, that has just damaged your lungs. So your rate of decline, you know, may be similar to a non-smoker, but you're starting off at a kind of more impaired level to begin with. And so you're always going to be, you know, worse off. It is challenging to differentiate between, you know, age-related decline and something more ominous that's going on. So as you said, it's never a bad idea to be evaluated for new cutting-edge procedures or therapies. There's new medications. There's new minimally invasive treatment options like this. And the evaluations are all easy. It's things like CT scans, breathing tests, ultrasound of your heart, nothing that requires any type of needle, any type of procedure. It's honestly things that most patients have had anyway by the time that they're seeing me.
The last question I would ask of you is, as we are speaking right now, there are patients seeing other pulmonologists and about their issues. And that pulmonologist doesn't have the knowledge of what you're talking about. And so what are the options that they are offering the patients? You know, and the reason I think it's so important, this is an important question, is because prior to this BLVR, you would have been offering kind of the same kinds of responses that other pulmonologists are offering patients right now.
Yeah, you know, that's correct. I have a great relationship with the vast majority of the pulmonologists and other physicians in the greater Milwaukee area, and frankly, you know, the state, because of our position as a leading academic medical center, we do have statewide, you know, referrals. And so I think that other providers are, you know, by and large, always trying to do the best that they can for their patients. It's just so hard to keep up with all of the new technology and new advances. And so I don't think that it's ever wrong for patients to serve as their own advocates. I would never encourage a patient to circumvent their provider or to ignore, you know, their recommendations, but be your own advocate, do your own research, your own homework. And if, you know, you think that you may be a good candidate for something, it's never wrong to be evaluated. Worst case is you're going to get an evaluation and not be a candidate right now. And that's okay. At least you will know in that case.
So Dr. Kerman, I didn't mean the question to be critical of any other doctor. I just was asking the question because, again, you know, there are patients right now and who are suffering from these things who wind up under the knife. And so that's why it's so critically important that this conversation gets, you know, magnified throughout this city, this state, and this nation.
I agree 100%. You know, there's a lot of, you know, great, you know, very, very thoughtful doctors of all different specialties. I think that the pulmonology care in the greater Milwaukee area and honestly throughout Wisconsin is really good, really strong. And that's why it's, you know, so nice to work and practice in this area. I do get many, many referrals from pulmonologists all over the state who are trying to act in their patients' best interest and to serve as advocates. And when I see that, it makes me appreciate The level of teamwork and the camaraderie, frankly, that is present, patients undoubtedly benefit from it.
Hey, Dr. Kerman, it has been a pleasure and an honor to have you on the Civic Media Network and to be able to give this life-changing information. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Earl. It's been a pleasure.
All right.